It's an astonishing goal. That's the way to do it. Valve or not, he's put plenty of air into the Manchester United Carabao Cup challenge. Just a few hours from his birthday, and that is very, very special.
All too often, professional footballers are seen as overvalued, overpaid, and only good for putting balls in the back of the net. But the real achievement of Marcus Rashford this week has been to be judged not by his skills, or his salary, or even his race, but by the content of his character. This nation has a long way to go when it comes to racial equality, but in a sense it is a fulfilment of one aspect of Martin Luther King's speech that we heard parts of last week. King said, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the colour of their skin, but by the content of their character." And King was right. Our character is what really matters, because it is our character that really matters to God. So let's remember that these last chapters of the book of Genesis are an account of Jacob's family line. Let's remember that Jacob's sons would become the heads of the 12 tribes of Israel, and together they would form God's chosen nation. But they are also the forefathers of us as Christians, because Jesus fulfilled the promise of Israel and forms us into a new nation, a new Israel, his body, the church. So this is our story too. And I wonder what we should make of the character of Jacob's children. I suspect the answer is, well, not a lot, really. Nations generally big up their leaders. They erect statues to them and carefully rewrite history to show their leaders in the best possible light. So isn't it remarkable that the Bible, instead of bigging up the leaders of Israel, actually writes devastatingly honest accounts of their characters? The leaders of God's chosen nation are described as they really were, a very troubled bunch of people. But that's precisely the kind of people that Jesus calls to be a part of his church. Just look at his first disciples, Peter, the rock, James and John, the sons of thunder, who were only interested in collecting glory for themselves, Levi, a tax collector. What a troubled bunch of people. And then there's you and me. But the good news is that Jesus doesn't just call us into his people. If we open our hearts to serve, he goes about preparing us for that service. He prepares our character, even if it does take a lifetime. Let's see how God goes about preparing Joseph, because I think that God often does the same for us if we're serious about glorifying God with our lives. So firstly, God unexpectedly creates a big change in our lives. One day, Joseph was sat at home with very little to do, protected by his overindulgent father. The next day, he's lying in a pit about to be sold into slavery. It sounds strange, but often God uses big changes to prepare us for service. I well remember one Valentine's Day morning when I received a phone call from my mum, and she said, "You need to come over to Norwich now." But I didn't make it before my father died in hospital, completely out of the blue. He was only 70 years old. But it was just the prompt that I needed to leave my job at Royal Mail to focus more on what God wanted me to be doing with my time. When God comes to prepare us for something new, he rarely warns us. I suspect that if Joseph had known what God was planning for his life, he almost certainly wouldn't have left the safety of his father's house in order to search for his brothers that day. God doesn't want us to be stay-at-home Christians, never taking risks for God. The Christian life is pretty full-on. It's not a stay-at-home kind of lifestyle. God rarely says stay, he normally says go. Even if, like Joseph, we're not yet prepared for that, going is part of that preparation. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we have to move house or city or country. It might mean that we just have to leave our comfort zones, do something different or act differently to everyone else around us. God knows. But he often uses a big change in our lives to move us in a new direction. Secondly, God loves us enough to tackle our root problem. Do you remember our illustration last week of the sculptor chipping away anything that didn't look like a horse to make a horse? Well, here in this video, the sculptor is making a horse out of clay. But at the moment, the body of the horse looks like it's come to rest on a tree trunk very painfully. It's actually a support full of clay whilst the clay is still soft, but it looks very uncomfortable and it also spoils the horse. So watch what the sculptor does to remove the support once the clay has hardened sufficiently. No doubt there's more chipping away and smoothing the clay to be done, but he goes straight for that support, that thing that is most unlike a horse, the thing that is spoiling the horse. Watch the operation that goes on to reach that support which is buried deep in the clay. No doubt God could have tackled many things about Joseph, but his biggest problem was his self-righteousness, because his father favoured him over his brothers so obviously. And the symbol of that self-righteousness is the coat of many colours. It had to go before Joseph could be made ready. So the brothers tore it off him and dipped it in blood. The amazing technicolour coat was taken back to his father, caked in the dried blood of a goat, whilst Joseph was being marched off to Egypt. Now you know me, you know that I like cars that are a little bit different from everyone else's. And I like houses which are interesting and different too. They don't have to be large or expensive, just interesting. They might be old, or they might be brutally modernist. It doesn't matter as long as they are different. But whenever I buy a boring old people carrier, they always turn out to be great cars and cause me no problems. And whenever I buy something interesting, I seem to spend more time lying underneath them than I do driving them. And we own a lovely house in Norwich, but it's not an interesting house. I tried so hard to buy a different kind of house, often cheaper than the house we ended up with, but for whatever reason, the purchase never came to anything. It's not that God is mean and doesn't want me to enjoy these things. It's just perhaps that they're symbolic of a kind of lifestyle I'd like to enjoy rather than what I'm doing right now. You see, they get in the way of my service. For you, the biggest barrier to service might be a desire for comfort, pride in your current circumstances, or looking for the praise of men instead of God's. But if you love God and you're open to serve him, beware of his surgical strikes on your root problems. Thirdly, God teaches us how weak and sinful other people can be to guard us against disappointment. See, Joseph learned a lot about his brothers that day. He learned exactly how low they were prepared to stoop. Now, I know this might sound bleak, but if you can get beyond Lloyd Webber's singing and dancing brothers with their crazy sunglasses, Joseph's story at this point is utterly bleak, isn't it? And if we set about God's work expecting the unstinting support and encouragement of even our Christian brothers and sisters, then we will at some point be let down by them. If Joseph is treated that way by his brothers, we shouldn't be surprised if sometimes our Christian brothers and sisters aren't as excited about the project that we're planning as we are, or even seem to be actively preventing us from doing something that we see as God's will for our life. Until Christ comes again, Christ's family here on earth can be as dysfunctional as Jacob's family was thousands of years ago. We're all work in progress. Uncut diamonds are cut using other diamonds. It's a painful process, but it's all part of our preparation for service. We don't want to give up at the first sign of discouragement, so God teaches us that we need to forgive others as we have ourselves been forgiven, and to look for his vindication rather than the vindication of those around us. These were essential lessons for Joseph to learn because he was so desperate to be vindicated. And they are essential lessons for us too. Finally, God teaches us to leave the past behind. As Joseph was thrown into the pit, he fully expected to die. He didn't know about Reuben's half-baked rescue plan. So far as he was concerned, he was going to die in that pit. He would never get to say goodbye to his father or to his coat of many colours. Joseph had never considered going to live in Egypt, and he didn't speak Egyptian very well. But when the Ishmaelites from Medes turned up, and he was lifted out of the pit and sold to the traders. Well, even the journey to Egypt as a slave suddenly looked like an attractive proposition compared to dying alone from thirst and hunger. At least he got to say goodbye to that pit, and he must have been grateful for that. Sometimes God has to teach us to leave the past behind so that we're not always looking back like Lot's wife who turned into a pillar of salt. None of us want to be a pillar of salt. I know it doesn't sound like much fun, but we shouldn't shy away from God's work because the suffering of preparation becomes too much. The writer to the Hebrews writes in chapter 12, initially quoting Proverbs 3, "My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you. Because the Lord disciplines the one he loves, and he chastens everyone he accepts as his son." And then from verse 7, he writes, "Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children. God disciplines us for our good, in order that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it." There can be joy in God's preparation school, his prep school for life and service. We just need to see that God's interventions are necessary, come just at the right time, and are just the right thing. We need to keep on trusting him, no matter what life brings, so that we can go on to that harvest of righteousness and peace. God cares about our salvation, and he cares about our preparation. One day we shall be with him in heaven. Until then, he is forming our character, making us more like Jesus, and giving the glory back to him. So Joseph went to Egypt, not as an exalted ambassador from Canaan, full of self-righteousness and the need for self-vindication, but as someone simply grateful to have been pulled out of a pit. And that gave him a totally different perspective on a new life he was being called to live. He didn't have the option to go back. He just had to get on with it, use those gifts that God had given him, and be grateful. And if he was ever tempted to despair, he had a dream to fall back on, that one day he would meet his family again under very different circumstances. God would vindicate him when the time was right, but not before. God would show him that self-interest must be swallowed up for God's greater glory. I'm going to finish there. I'm going to pause a little bit, and then I'm going to pray. Dear Lord, as we look back over this episode in the life of Joseph, help us not to be discouraged when we experience suffering of many kinds, but help us to remember your promise in Romans 8, that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose, to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he, Jesus, might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. And help us to remember that you only discipline those you love. In the name of the Lord Jesus Christ.